Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand.
They're totally fine. I'm not mad at all. I'm not.
Classic.
Really situation. Guys, we're just talking about a flight debacle of mine that really has gone off the rails. I tried and I thought I booked a flight for July 16th to 22nd to LA and back. Oh no, I go to my calendar today to put something on ours, and I see I have a flight to LA on Saturday. But the thing is, I didn't book a flight to LA on Saturday. So it's really become a situation. Like
Yeah, it's brutal. I recently, you guys, don't judge me, but I did book a flight on Frontier Airlines for a really quick flight to Denver in August, and it was so cheap, and I was like, okay, let's do it. There are so many things to unpack, like the fact that they charge you $20. If you want to speak to an agent at the gate, you have to pay them. They put a fee on everything you can imagine, even a carry-on, a purse. You have to, your bag has to, fit, and they check every single bag before you go on the plane that it fits in this, little box. It's insane. Anyways, obviously, lesson learned, I'm not booking on Frontier ever again. But then I also, the flight that I booked was for a Saturday night. So I had all day in Denver, then I can go home late Saturday night.
Yeah.
I randomly go to check it the other day and the flight said it's for 6 a.m. I'm like, they definitely changed this without my consent, because there's no fucking way in hell. There's no way my brain booked a 6 a.m. flight. In fact, I know that I booked a nighttime flight and it just all of a sudden changed to 6 a.m. And they did change my flight number, but they're like, that's all that changed. And then I looked and it said 6 a.m. I'm like, you guys are playing me. But again, there's just no world in which I'm going to sit for however long with Frontier Airlines fake, terrible customer service. I'm sure they have and try to get my flight back and explain this, because it's some phantom weird thing they did to me. So I just paid $50 to change it, because I'm like, I'm not dealing with y'all.
It really
lost my business.
Oh, for sure. They got a little
lost
money
all
up front.
Of yours. And everyone
I will never be booking Frontier. I will also never be booking Alaska Airlines again, which was a very random choice. I've never flown, because
Alaska usually isn't too bad, except for when their door flies off of their planes, you know?
You know, when I did start digging into this debacle, it was a Boeing 737. And I was like, huh.
They tend to be.
Yep. So nonetheless, I wasn't exactly pleased.
What I do know for sure is that these airlines cannot be trusted. And it wasn't our fault. It was theirs. And they do shady shit. And they suck. They're the worst.
Yeah.
So unjust.
Absolutely insane. But most importantly, how was the birthday weekend? Guys, it's a Gemini.
She's birthday. 28. It was a wholesome weekend. I was wanting. I went home. I hung out with my family and Biggie. I went on a boat. I went to Carmel. I played pickleball. So it was great. It was fantastic.
That sounds amazing. She's a pickleball queen. Literally.
I know. I just came from a pickleball game. Guys, it was intense. I won a couple. Yeah, we played a couple games and we rotated partners. In the last game, my friend Emily and I played the two boys. They basically were trying to take it easy on us. We're like, you guys, this is not a gendered sport. We can beat your ass. This also isn't an age sport. A 70-year-old could beat our ass. There's no rules in pickleball in terms of who's good and who's not. Everyone's a black horse.
No, literally. That's the thing with especially racket sports of any type. I remember I went to tennis camp back in the day and a 7-year-old boy beat me. And I'm good at tennis. You don't want to fuck with me in the court, okay? Like, I will win and you will cry. But this 7-year-old, absolutely. I mean, he must have come out of the womb with a racket in his hand. Like, he was skirt, skirt, skirt across the court.
And pickleball is that times 10. Like, it's crazy the amount of diverse demographics of humans that could play this sport and, like, really be good. So, anyways, we beat these two men who think they're macho and athletic. And it was just, it was sweet, sweet victory.
Glad you won. Victory lap. Let's fucking go. There will just be no athletic accomplishment uncelebrated on this podcast. This is a sports podcast on occasion.
Especially today.
Amen.
Why this is a sports podcast. Mm-hmm. Today and every day. I think we should introduce our guest. And because this guest is...
That was good.
Thank you. Is a former NFL athlete, among 100 other things, but sports podcast, so... First things first.
Moment of silence for that brilliance. I did not know where that was going, and she really did circle it back to the guest.
Thank you. Yeah.
Golf thoughts.
Good at what I do.
There it is. That's why we get paid the medium bucks. You know, it really...
medium to low bucks. That's how we get paid. The medium
However,
to
if you,
low
anyone
bucks.
Would like to pay us big bucks, by all means, slide into our inbox. Anyways, moving along to our guest. Our guest today is Texas Representative Congressman Colin Allred. He is running for Senate, like U.S. Senate in Texas. He's running for, Ted Cruz's seat, aka against Ted Cruz.
Fire me
everybody's, up. Everybody's favorite werewolf.
Everyone's least favorite face. Or is it Mitch McConnell?
Turtle versus werewolf? Who's going
to
win that
fight? Well, what I mentioned too on this, you guys, I mentioned this probably made up fact that I made up. Around like the least favorite senators. I swear I heard this through the grapevine.
No, that's actually through the grapevine. True.
But I saw maybe an article or something. It was like ranked least favorite senators. Ted Cruz is number one. I don't know where. I can't cite this source, but I just know it to be true, you know? So it brings me so much joy, and I know you as well, to be platforming the man running against the man we hate, truly.
I mean, what... What an honor, the way you put that. But no, we talked to the congressman about some of the platforms he is running on, the policy pillars, and what he really hopes to bring to the United States Senate and also to obviously Texans, like what is needed, what the conversations have been on the ground, and also, of course, what people think of Ted Cruz, because we got to know. We got to know.
And also like who he is, you know, like his character, because... True. One thing we know for sure is that he's running against someone with little to no character. And you get to see...
He is a character.
He is a character with no character. But this man running against Ted Cruz and our guest today has so much character. And we get to see that as well.
1,000%. Nonetheless, where's this intro coming?
This is one of the longer ones we've ever had. Yeah. I think it's time. Say his name. Have we said his name? I think it's time. Without further ado, here is Representative Colin Allred. Wow. I just did that.
Maddie's trying to come from a job.
I think it's time to go solo. All right. This is too much. Into the episode we go.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius, only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
All right, Rep Allred, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. And we have to dive right in because we need to talk about the fact that you're running for Senate against Ted Cruz, which we will circle back to. But we got to get the backstory. You know, you're in the House of Representatives doing that role and you're sort of like, oh, got to run for Senate. You know, what is it about the Senate seat? You're like, this is my moment. This is the time to run. This is the time to, you know, really, you know, try and fix that situation.
Yeah, no. Well, you know, thanks for having me on, first of all. You know, I think I have kind of an unusual route to Congress in the first place. You know, I was raised by a single mom in Dallas, was a public school teacher, you know, and we don't pay our teachers enough in Texas. So, you know, growing up was, you know, we relied on our community, really, you know, and it was a big deal for us. So I got a scholarship to play football at Baylor, you know, played in the NFL as a linebacker for the Tennessee Titans. Then I went to law school, became a voting rights lawyer and served in the Obama administration. And I had no plans to run for office at all, or certainly not at that point when I did run, when the election in 2016 happened. And I thought that, you know, the community that I was from, you know, I was born and raised in, where my wife and I were living, that it was being represented by a guy who I didn't think reflected the values that I knew that community had. And the problem was he was a 22-year incumbent. He'd been unopposed in the previous election. Nobody thought he could be beaten. He was like a very powerful member of Congress. And so it was kind of naive. I just kind of naively thought, you know, we should be able to beat this guy. But, you know, not many other people did. But then, you know, we did. We beat him by nearly 7 points in a race that most folks didn't think we could win. And so I'm in my third term in Congress, and I feel pretty similarly about this race as I did about that one, which is that I'm a fourth-generation Texan. You know, grew up in Dallas, went to school at, you know, Baylor and Waco. My family's from Brownsville and the tip of Texas. I think I know who we are, and we are certainly not who Ted Cruz says we are, or my story wouldn't be possible if we were, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I felt like we could not be misrepresented by this guy for six more years. And the other part of it was, you know, I think that what's happening in Texas right now requires an immediate response.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll talk about it more, but we're experiencing what, you know, a near total ban on abortion looks like, what, you know, kind of an attack on freedom, as I see it, looks like. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can solve that for Texans is going to be at the federal level by restoring these rights, particularly in the case of Roe v. Wade, by codifying Roe v. Wade.
Yes, for sure. Well, I'm pretty sure I saw, like, Ted Cruz is, like, what, one of the, like, top three most disliked senators. Is that correct?
I think that's probably factual.
I think you have probably an absolute tribe behind you wanting you to beat this guy. Like, what do you think you're running on that's really going to speak to voters in Texas? I know there's, again, such a range of issues, but what is it specifically that you think your constituents there see in Ted Cruz and be like, no, this is not for me. I want someone who's actually going to represent me. Like, what is that thing?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, elections are about choices, right? And certainly for folks who served with Senator Cruz, I think they, you know, he engenders a dislike almost immediately among them. Let's just say that. Like, there's a long list of his colleagues saying things that if anyone ever said that about me, I would go hide under a rock, you know, like, yeah, people calling him Lucifer and saying that, you know, why do people take such an instant disliking to him? And you know, Mitch McConnell said, because it saves time, you know, like, these are things that if someone said it about me in any context, I'd be like, wow, I really messed up in the way I've approached my, how I handle myself. But I also, you know, first of all, I want folks to understand what he's not been doing for us. But mm-hmm. I want to give him something to vote for as well. And, you know, I think I have a uniquely Texas story. But when I was in the NFL, we had these guys we called me guys. And me guys were the ones who would rush to the microphones and try to take the credit after a game, or who, you know, were always looking out for themselves first and wouldn't want to do something if they thought that it wouldn't help them, even if it was good for the team. And we have a lot of me guys, unfortunately, in D.C., but Ted Cruz is the number one me guy, right? And the way that shows
great
up,
analogy.
Yeah, I mean, and I, you know, in teams, these guys get weeded out. You know, like locker rooms kind of chew these folks up and spit them out because they're not,
for sure,
you know, they're such a negative impact. But in politics, sometimes it gets rewarded. Mm-hmm. But the way it shows up for Texas is that, you know, when the lights go out and 30 million Texans are freezing in the dark, when we have, you know, our winter storm a few years ago, and, you know, Texans are dying from and bringing generators indoors because their power's out and they're dying from carbon monoxide poisoning. They're breaking up their fence posts and burning them because it's the only warmth they can get. They're under boil water advisories because the water treatment plants in their cities in Austin and Houston are not on. And so they have to boil their water before they can drink it. When that happened in Texas, when it went basically a week without power, that's when Ted Cruz decided to go on vacation to Cancun, right? And we all, most folks know this or remember this if they think about it for a second. But the only way you can do that, right? And every Texan I talk to knows about it. The only way you can do that is if you're a me person, right? That you, that when this crisis strikes, you think, well, what can I do, right? That this is inconvenient for me. I want to get away, right? But you're an elected official representing 30 million Texans. You should be springing into action, trying to help these folks, right? And that's what a me guy does. And I, I'm somebody who's always been, I was captain of my football team at Baylor. I've always been somebody who tries to bring folks together. And I think that what we have to talk about here is the contrast between a me guy and somebody who believes in the power of we, and we are going to reject Ted Cruz on November 5th. And that's what this is going to be about for Texans.
Totally. And I am curious because there's obviously a difference between national media and local media, what people seem to be talking about online and reality, all of those things. And so, he's fostered this reputation of being heinous, let's just put it that way, or a me guy. But what is the vibe on the streets? Like when you're talking to voters, like one-on-one, and the issues are coming up, what is their opinion on him? And also, what are their opinions on the issues? What are those issues that are top of mind for Texas voters right now?
Yeah. Well, I think Texans know who Ted Cruz is, and I think they're looking for an alternative. And we have to, and, obviously I want to be that alternative, but I want them to know who I am. And that's what we're making sure that we've been doing over the course of this campaign, and particularly over this final stretch of the last 6 months, is letting Texans know, who I am. But I think fundamentally, there's an attack on freedom going on in Texas. And what I mean by that is, I think there was, an older version of the Texas Republican Party that has been in power here for some time that you probably consider to be, pro-business, but largely leave you alone, largely let you, leave you and your family alone. That has morphed now into a group of folks, particularly in Ted Cruz, who are obsessed with the culture war issues, who are obsessed with controlling people, controlling what they're reading by banning books, controlling the culture around them, attacking, Bud Light if they have, a trans woman do an ad or something like that, that obviously the biggest way that shows up then is then attacking folks' reproductive freedom and saying, we're going to take this decision away from a woman and her doctor and put it in the hands of folks like Ted Cruz. And I really mean that because my wife and I've had two boys in Dallas in the last 5 years. And I didn't know my father growing up. And so I was very, very serious about attending every single ultrasound appointment, every single genetic testing appointment. And any parent will tell you that when you're in those rooms, you're sitting there holding your breath, and those rooms are too small for Ted Cruz to be in there as well. Right. So if you get the news that we all hope we don't get, that the pregnancy has a problem, that there's a problem with the baby, that there's a problem for the mother, and you have to make this heartbreaking decision about what to do, that should be a decision between you, your spouse, and your doctor, not one that the state should be controlling that. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the story that Texas women are going through right now. I'm not making this up, and y'all know this, but I have friends of mine like Dr. Austin Denard in Dallas who. She's an OBGYN. Her husband is an OBGYN. She went to high school about 10 minutes away from me in Dallas. Our lives are not that dissimilar in terms of where we grew up in Dallas. She's a sixth-generation Texan. She has two kids. She has a much more than third pregnancy. And she notices on the ultrasound that the baby's skull is not forming. She knew right away that she's going to have to flee the state of Texas to try and get the care she needed. Or Kate Cox, who had another mother too, who had a third pregnancy and who had to go to the emergency room four times. Her doctor said she needed a medically necessary abortion. And she asked her state if she could have it close to home because she had a 1 and 3 year old at home. And they said no. And in fact, she had to flee the state because they threatened her and her doctor and her hospital with criminal prosecution if she got the treatment that she needed. After going to the emergency room four times, right? 26,000 Texas women have been forced to give birth to their rapist child, according to the Houston Chronicle. That's not my opinion. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's what this control now shows up looking like. And this extremism has gone way, way too far. And I think Texans sense that implicitly. And that's part of what we're going to reject in November.
Totally.
For sure.
Which
it's the stories are heinous. But it's important that this year we tell those stories because they're real. Yeah. And I think sometimes when things are so politicized, it just comes down to like, oh, this is politics. Like, no, this is literal people's lives. It's real, so personal.
Real people.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I'm curious, like, after talking about Ted Cruz so much, we want to know about you, not only as a candidate, but as a congressman and as a person. Like, what are you running on in terms of, like, who are you? And, like, what are some of your major accomplishments that you think will translate into being an amazing senator?
Oh, thank you, Maddie. And I'm running on, you know, who I am, of course, and you know, my story and understanding who I think we are as Texans and what we can do together. You know, obviously the perseverance that I've, you know, been able to show, having succeeded in multiple different capacities. But, you know, the way I've served, I think, it is a way that shows that it's possible to bring folks together, even in this divided atmosphere. And you know, listen, I'm a civil rights lawyer by training, voting rights lawyer specifically. I will go to bat every single day for folks' civil rights and for especially the right to vote and the right to, you know, basically be able to chase your version of the American dream free of discrimination, whether that's based on your identification or who you love or, you know, where you come from or how, what you sound like. That I will always protect. But you know, I don't think that everything has to be a fight. And I actually have been the most bipartisan member of the Texas congressional delegation. There's 38 of us, and I'm number one in terms of bipartisanship. I've gotten awards for my bipartisanship. And I'm the exact opposite in that regard of Ted Cruz, who is a hyper, hyper, hyper partisan, right? Who even when something is good for the state of Texas, if he thinks it'll help a Democrat, he's not going to be a part of it, right? You know?
Yeah.
And he's proud of it. I mean, for 12 years, he's been incredibly proud of it.
The poster child of toxic politics.
He is.
Toxic partisanship.
If you're wondering, I mean, for folks out there, and I know, you know, some of your listeners might be wondering this, how we got here, how we got to this place where our politics were, you know, so divided and so divisive and so ugly. It's folks like Ted Cruz put us in this position. It really is. Who have taken, you know, the divisions in our country and pulled them apart. And so while working across the aisle, I've seen that we can lower folks' costs for your healthcare, for your prescription drugs, that we can work on, you know, paid leave. This is something I was the first ever member of Congress to take paternity leave. And I am now one of the leading voices for us to pass a national paid leave policy, part of a bipartisan working group, actually, that's, you know, trying to get that done for pre-K. You know, the things that I know that even if, you know, we may have some partisan fights, these are not partisan issues. You know, investing in our infrastructure, investing in our future. These are all things that I think it is possible to do together. And I want Texans to know that, you know, whether they agree with me on everything or not, I will be their senator too. Whereas with Ted Cruz, you know, quite honestly, if he doesn't agree with you or if you're not on his ideological side, he's really uninterested in what you have to say.
Totally. Well, to the point of bipartisanship, you know, I'm curious about some of those accomplishments, what they've looked like, some of the bills that have either passed or at least gained some traction, because, you know, it is so hard to get anything done in this current environment. But curious what some of those wins or close to wins have been.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things I'm you know, most, you know, proud of is the work I've done for our veterans. And I was on the Veterans Affairs Committee. Texas is a place where a lot of Texans have served in our military, or also where a lot of folks who have served moved to Texas. We have the second most veterans of any state. We have the most women veterans of any state. We are growing really rapidly. And you know, in my area, in North Texas, we had a big issue where we had the hospital, VA hospital, that was the second busiest hospital in the country in terms of the VA. And it had long wait times. It had enormous, you know, needs for more space. We had this hospital that had closed down in Garland that was no longer operational, but that was in really good shape. And it was about a $400 million value hospital. And for about a year, I worked with the Trump administration to get that hospital donated to the VA, which is the first time that I know of that's ever happened. And it might sound easy to have a hospital donated to a you know, a healthcare agency, but it was incredibly difficult. And there were so many times that it nearly fell through. But that hospital, as I said, valued about $400 million. It would have cost us $1 billion to build a similar facility. It's creating 5,000 jobs. It's helping us better serve, tens of thousands of veterans in the North Texas area. And it's going to be one of my biggest legacy items for my time in Congress that, we got this VA hospital in North Texas. I've had legislation that's built other VA facilities in Texas, including the Spinal Cord Injury Center in Dallas and a VA Health Center in El Paso. And then I've been one of the driving forces behind some of this big legislation that you've seen that is, I think, helping the country the most, whether that's the infrastructure bill, which mm-hmm. I'm on the committee that dealt with that, or the CHIPS and Science Act, which is helping us kind of retake our lead on semiconductor manufacturing. And one thing I've always been focused on has been healthcare, because Texas has the highest uninsured rate in the country. For me and for everyone, healthcare is personal. My mom is a breast cancer survivor. And so I've been focused on, my first act in Congress was to defend the Affordable Care Act in court to prevent it from being overturned. We were ultimately successful preventing it from being overturned. And I'm really proud that in the last Congress, we capped the cost of insulin at $35 a month for folks who are on Medicare. We tried to do it for everyone, but honestly, folks like Ted Cruz voted against it in the Senate. We were unable to cap it for everyone. And we kept out-of-pocket costs for folks on Medicare. We made the ACA much stronger and better. And, I think, looking at coming through the pandemic, the leadership that, I showed and others, I think helped us be in this place where now we've recovered better than really any of our peer countries.
Mm-hmm. And who's your team to completely switch this conversation around? Are you like a proud forever Tennessee Titan fan, or once you left the team, go back to Texas football?
Yeah, I think, and I tell you all this all the time, when you play in NFL, you're not really a fan of the teams.
Yeah.
I have teams that I like because of how they play. I like play styles. And if there's players that I like, and I think they're playing the way that I wish I would have played or that I to see, And so I will say this, though. I was a huge Cowboys fan growing up. I knew every single player on the Cowboys rosters, when they won the Super Bowls. And this is way before y'all's time. But back there was a time when the Cowboys used to win Super Bowls quite a lot. And I was a huge fan then. And I still root for them because, first of all, when the Cowboys win, folks in Dallas are in a much better mood, just quite honestly. But, I do want them to do well. And, the Texans are actually doing well now. So I root for the Texas teams. I want them to do well in football. But I wouldn't say that I'm a fan the way other folks are. I look at it probably more from, it's like watching the work that you used to do. You know what I mean? That's kind of the way I see it.
That's fair. I usually do uniform colors. So that's where I'm at. I'm like, oh,
I like mascots, the redesign. Mascots, yeah, branding, right. And colors for Samantha.
Exactly. Yeah.
They're just speaking my language.
That's not a bad way to choose, honestly. Worse ways. Yeah.
No, totally. I'm just waiting on a basketball front for the Knicks to figure it out, obviously from a winning perspective, but also from a colors. I'm just we can't be doing this orange and blue situation. Mm-hmm. It clashes with everything. Drives me nuts. But regardless, I could go on a 10-minute rant about that. And we won't go down that route. Instead, I want to hop to a different question. And that's about celebrities of all things. Celebrities take on issues and help, sometimes push, legislation across the finish line, or at least try and get them there. I mean, Paris Hilton, great example of that. So I'm curious if there's a celebrity out there that either has sort of an issue top of mind or elsewise that you would be like, oh, it'd be so cool to work with them. And, also what issue that would be.
Yeah, I mean, so my answer as a Texan will always be Beyonce, but then I'll give you another one because she's a Houston
native. There's no better answer.
Yeah, I think our issue in Texas has been that we're a non-voting state, right? And so to have somebody like Beyonce talk about the importance of voting or voting rights, it would be incredible. And as a voting rights lawyer, it's personal, of course. But I want to shout out Serena and her husband, Alexis, because, her husband, he's the co-founder of Reddit, and I've worked with him a bit on paid family leave. And I think that they are great advocates for parents and for parenting and for the importance of leave and for families to have time with their babies and with their children. Serena, kind of famously, coming back, from pregnancies and still being, a champion tennis player. So Serena Williams and her husband, I think, to me, the fact that we're the only major country in the world that doesn't have a national paid leave policy is outrageous.
Yeah.
And for folks out there to understand what I mean by this, what I mean by this is that, you know, in most jobs in the country, if somebody has a baby, you know, Friday, they might have to come back to work on the next Monday because they don't have any time off. And of course, physically, that can sometimes be impossible, but mentally, it's also incredibly damaging. And most childcare centers won't even take a child until they're 6 weeks old. And so, you know, who's going to watch the baby? How are you going to, you know, feed the baby? You know, I mean, listen, my wife and I, we've been through this, but every person is going to go through this in some way, shape or form, right? In the NFL, we used to say you have 100% injury record. Like, it means every NFL player is going to have some injury. Well, in life, you have 100% chance that at some point you'll need some time off from work, whether it's because you're welcoming a child or because of, you know, a health issue, or because of a health issue of a parent or a sibling or a loved one, or a mental health period in which you might need a little bit of time away. And this is something that over the course of the pandemic, we've come to understand about each other, that we need to be more flexible in our work lives. And so the time has come. And the good news is that I do think there's a bipartisan consensus around this. It's not just like, you know, folks like me are saying that we should do this. I went to the Trump White House to do an event with Ivanka Trump around paid leave when they were in the White House. I've worked with Republicans in Congress now on this issue. And I think that with, you know, folks like Serena and Alexis Hannon, you know, I think that we could maybe, you know, get some good momentum behind a national paid leave policy that could take care of folks and give them a chance to, you know, welcome children, deal with the stuff that happens in life, but still be really productive workers.
1,000% love that. And now I just want to see like a little like US Open activation. Maybe there's like a booth event moment where the two of them are there talking about paid leave. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could be there. I don't know if there's any tennis tournaments in Texas that are massive. I'll have to like circle back on that.
Love that. And sports. We gotta bring it back to sports because I was gonna ask you too, like being an athlete, I think there are so many transferable skills to being a representative, but also to like be a good human. And I'm just like curious what you found that like sports has given you in terms of just like character building.
Well, that's a great question. I do think that if you're going to be in a legislative body, which is what I am in, right, that you have to work with other people to pass a bill. I need 218 people to pass a bill in the House. I need usually 60 people to pass a bill in the Senate. I need obviously a president to sign it. So it's a collective effort. I think everyone who does that should have to play a team sport. And it doesn't have to be, you know, physical sport. It could be, you know, something else where you're something where you rely on others and they rely on you and you understand there's something larger than yourself and that your role in that team is important, but it's not the only thing that matters. And that what really matters is the team as a whole succeeds, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I meant about the whole me guy thing with Ted Cruz. Because like, you know,
I was going to say, he probably played like golf growing up or something.
I don't know. I really don't. But I think we've all known.
Or nothing.
People.
He doesn't seem athletic.
Know, yeah. I think it's safe to say I'm a better athlete. But
100%.
Yeah, I think we've all known people who, when you're working with them, you know that they're not looking out for the group. They're whether it's, you know, something you're doing like for school or professionally. And those folks, when if you have too many of them, then it's really hard to get anything done at all, you know. And on every good team I was on, and I wasn't always on good teams for sure, but every good team I was on had, you know, you'd have maybe a few knuckleheads who were like that, but you'd have more of the folks who believe that, listen, we got to work together to get this done. Like what matters isn't that I get the credit, but what matters is that we do something great together. Mm-hmm. And I think that sports taught me that. And it gave me a chance to be a leader probably, you know, much earlier in life than I would have been. I was been captain of basically every team I've ever been on. In high school, I was class president, right? You know, like sports put that, gave me that chance to do that. But I think fundamentally, locker rooms, in my experience, are places where people from very, very different backgrounds come together. And you would never imagine, and these folks would never be friends out in outside life. They would never interact. They would never know each other probably, but on a team, they realize, hey, we're not that different from each other. And they end up, you know, sometimes being, you know, best friends or brothers. And I've seen that happen so many times that it has reminded me that no matter how different we think we are from someone who has a very different background or different worldview, that I guarantee you there's a lot that you do agree about, because I've seen it in groups that you'd never imagine could find that kind of common ground.
Yeah,
totally. Same. Which is so important. And I think that's the type of thing that helps us move forward in this very polarized moment. But I think to like cap it all off, we need a recommendation, something that you do to relax after all the craziness, dealing with all the mishigas all over the place. Like, is there a podcast, a TV show, something you're like, you know what? This is the breath of fresh air that I take to decompress.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the real answer is that I will watch whatever kind of trash reality TV my wife is watching.
That's the right answer.
That is such a green flag. Like, yeah. I'm telling you, that's what I'm looking for in my future partner. Will he watch reality TV with me?
And I will complain at first. And then as I'm walking around doing chores, I'll be looking and watching what's happening. And then I'll follow a storyline, you know, and know what's happening in this bizarre person's life, you know. And then
what's the show? Like, are a couple shows watch?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, my wife Allie, she's a high powered lawyer. She's smarter than me. So like, you know, take this all into context. Like 90 Day Fiance, Love is Blind, or you know, something.
Love is Blind, obsessed. You know. Well,
I did hear this theory, and I think it's so on the money. Is that people that are very smart watch reality TV because it's like viewing like sociology in real life and psychology.
Yeah.
So it's in a sense like a microcosm that you're studying. So anyone that like throws shade on trash TV, I'm like, you're not really thinking about it and like what the actual like analysis can be and how that comes to fruition. So I always think it's a green flag when somebody
And with people with just like jobs that really can be mentally exhausting, sometimes emotionally exhausting, like you gotta have that escapism, you know.
It's like, that's true. I agree with you. I think I don't know if my wife told me or someone else that apparently the viewership of some of these, that the viewership is like the highest educated viewership like of any show, you know. So like it's like a lot of high powered people who are intelligent, like you said, maybe looking to kind of see someone else for a little while.
Totally. We are staunch advocates of reality TV on the show, so we absolutely love to hear it.
I'm glad that I wasn't stepping into something that y'all were like, oh,
No, you couldn't have said a better answer, truly. Well, before you go, we would love to obviously make sure everyone knows where to find you and find your campaign. And if they want to get involved and help, we want to make sure everyone has those resources. So plug all the things. Great.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, our website is colinallred.com. That's one L in Colin and two in Allred. That's what I always say. And of course, you can follow us on all of our social media channels, or even on TikTok. But thank you all so much for doing this. And thank you for talking about these really important issues in a way that I think folks can understand, and giving me a chance to talk about what we're doing here. Because I do think that this is one of the most important elections that we've had. And there's so much on the ballot, and I hope that folks understand that. And I know the Texans, we're going to take care of our business in terms of Ted Cruz, but across the country, President Obama used to tell us that democracy is not a spectator sport. You know, like you're not watching the teams play it out. Like you're on the field and you're part of it. And so make sure that you're at the table so that you're not on the menu. You know what I mean?
Yes. You guys follow along. We're beating Ted Cruz. You understand what's happening here? Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank y'all. I appreciate you.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've use those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it?
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at Miro.com/diagram now.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.